This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, I'm Sharitz Abdullah and you've tuned in to The Breakfast Grill. In the studio with me this morning is Sinan Ismail, the CEO of Digital Durian, the creator of Didi and Friends, a popular Malay folklore nursery rhyme amongst children in Malaysia. Surpassing a total of 1.4 billion viewers in April this year, Digital Durian have grown to introduce new animations like Oma and Hana, interactive movies, as well as merchandise. Now, Sinan is here to speak to us about his venture in animation, Didi and Friends. So, Sinan, welcome to The Breakfast Grill.
Right, thanks for having me.
Now, for those who have not heard of Didi and Friends before, here's a snippet of their animation.
Uncle Anton has a farm.
E-I-E-I-O.
So, Sinan, I could see how it is very popular. Now, your characters, they are cute, educational, and both the music and lyrics are relatable. So, share with us, in your words, what do you think made Didi and Friends popular amongst our children?
Right, so I guess it's because of, we are, again, it's very relatable.
Yep.
The kids love it and the parents love it too. And I think that's very important because we're talking to preschoolers, children from 1 to 6 years old. And so the kids enjoy it very, very much because of the songs, because of the lyrics, because of the animation, the characters especially.
Mm.
And the parents, we tell the parents or we... In the messaging, it's always a fun, safe and educational cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
And fun works for the kids, safe and educational works for the parents. So the parents allow their kids to watch Didi and Friends.
But is there a science to it though? I mean, is it the shape, the colours? When you were creating Didi and Friends, were there a science behind it?
Right, so the reality is we stumble upon doing Didi and Friends. We always wanted to do it. We always saw a gap of preschool entertainment cartoons for young children. And if you talk the science behind it, definitely there is, right? There's two ways to look at it. One is the art side and one is the entertainment side, the content side. So if you go on the art side, even the names Didi, Nana and Jojo, they're very, very simple words and they're very catchy. It's as simple as sometimes parents say that my first words for my son is that not Mama, it's actually Didi.
Right.
So it's very easy. And of course, the colors, they're very bright colors, they're vibrant, and it's simple shapes.
Right? And all this you learned on your own, or did you get help, for an example, from a psychologist or someone who is a cartoon expert?
Okay, so part of it was self-discovery between us and our team. But we also have a few education consultants who come on board. So we have Puan Zaliza from Genius Outlet, and she has a franchise which has more than, I think, 40 kindergartens throughout Malaysia, and she's been doing this for more than 14, 15 years. And also we work with Professor Mariani from UM, and she's a psychologist,
right.
So an early childhood specialist. So getting their input in was very, very valuable. And till today, we're working with both of them.
And before Didi and Friends, how many characters and animation have you created which supposedly have failed before you managed to finalize this Didi and Friends?
Right. The reality is we were never a cartoon animation company.
Okay.
So Digital Durian now is 11 years old this year. Prior to doing Didi and Friends, we did other things like multimedia. So it was more actually servicing jobs and it was more skewed to the oil and gas industry. Actually,
okay.
For 3 years, and then we kind of like pivoted from B2B. We did B2C, and then we went to weddings, something totally different. So it was wedding trading, it was wedding videography. But the good thing was, again, it was B2C, so it was a different angle.
Okay.
And in terms of real cartoons, we'd never done one before.
So Didi and Friends was the first, and it hit it off.
It was the first which we really, really produced. Before that, it was more proposals. Yeah, there were a few proposals. Even Didi and Friends, before getting funding, was rejected, I think, 3 to 4 times.
Okay.
Right, before we actually came up with the real DDM Friends.
So DDM Friends have went through their own journey on its own.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's been 5 years and you are a hit on YouTube amongst the Malaysian children. DDM Friends has over 1.4 billion views and as well as 2 million subscribers. So is YouTube right now your main source of viewership to date?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Of course, YouTube is the main platform. But we also have Astro, which is Astro Cheerio, which is the second platform for us to for the children to view the content. And Astro, at the same time, is our co-production partner and they're co-investors in this IP.
Right. And you mentioned that you also have other streams. You also have other platforms where you broadcast your animation. So is YouTube your main revenue stream?
No, not yet. Really. So if you look at the chart, right, it's basically 30-30-40. So 30% comes from YouTube of the revenues. Another 30% comes from merchandising. So it's our business model is licensing. So we it's basically from royalties and minimum guarantees. And the 40% is actually coming from sponsorship. So we work with brands. For example, we work with Sestigen. The latest one, we're tying up with Chatime and also Big Apple. So when the sponsors come on board, we actually do branded content for them. And that's 40% of our revenues.
Okay, I'm going to get back into that, especially because you have chosen the line of intellectual property to carry out your business, yeah?
Yep.
But in the meantime, because I think a lot of people know your product through the YouTube, so how much is revenue from your YouTube videos alone?
Right, so it's been 5 years, and definitely seven figures. And again, I can't share the real numbers, but it's quite a good number, and it could be around 50% of our monthly overheads.
How about if I could give you a ballpark figure, and you could tell me how warm and cold I am? Now, based on our internal analysis, we estimate it's about 18 million ringgit. Now, are we close?
Nah, not yet. In total, we're still quite far, to be honest.
Okay.
Right. However, the reality is different companies. I mean, companies, okay, the reality again is we are still, the major views are coming from Malaysia and the target is to go global.
Sure.
Right? So we have English, Spanish, Portuguese.
That's why it's Didi and Friends and not Didi and Kawan Kawan, right?
Exactly. Right? And that's why they're chickens too, and because it's a global type of character. Yeah, so the target is to move forward. And can we do, I've been hearing, I mean, if you read the articles, you can see that good YouTubers globally can make around 15 to 20 million USD a year.
Okay.
Right, so that's the target. We're not there yet.
Okay.
And are we going there? Yes, we are.
All right.
And it's a journey which we want to fulfill.
Okay, well, good to know. Now, but still on the subject of YouTube, there are many concerns about sinister contents infiltrating children cartoons in the YouTube space. Now, what are your thoughts on this?
Right. I think regarding the content, I mean, YouTube is a platform, right? And the algorithm, they're doing their best.
Mm.
And we communicate with YouTube, we communicate with YouTube Kids. And they're working very hard to make sure that they filter the right content and get rid of the less good content. But for us, we've never got any bad feedback yet. And I think as the algorithm grows, and they're doing their best to make things better. And on one angle too is actually what I tell the parents is it's not just YouTube's job to manage that. And as a parent, we encourage you to
monitor,
watch together.
Yeah, watch together.
Watch together and monitor. So in my case, I use something like Chromecast.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't let my kid hold the phone. I actually choose what they watch.
How about you, though? Are you accountable for how others could possibly treat or infiltrate your content?
Right. So in terms of, for us, our content, we can control something based, it's called a content ID. Right. So we can block content which we feel is not suitable. And for now, we actually block user-generated content. We're thinking of unblocking in the future, but yes, we are accountable, and we want to make sure that the content is it has to be true to our core again. It has to be fun, safe, and educational.
Mm.
Right?
When you say that you do have some sense of accountability, what specifically are you doing? I mean, do you have human resources dedicated to address this issue specifically?
Right. We we do social media listening, right? So we have our team, which always takes in feedback from parents. And if there is something, something has happened before. For example, once we kind of like didn't close the captions, and somebody crowdsourced some captions, and that was not good. So in I think less than 5 minutes, we found out and we just blocked that.
So that's still limited, yeah. I mean, do we have a dedicated personnel scouring the internet looking for any former DDN friends and making sure that it is a genuine content coming from your company?
Right. We don't have a person doing that, but if it's on YouTube, we can detect that, right? And that is detected by the system, the content ID, and it's blocked automatically.
Okay, so in the meantime, joining us on The Breakfast Grill this morning is Sinan Ismail, the CEO of Digital Durian. We'll come back for more discussion with Sinan on his plans to make DD and Friends more inclusive right here on BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
You've tuned in to BFM 89.9. On The Breakfast Grill this morning is Sinan Ismail, the CEO of Digital Durian. Now, earlier we've spoken a lot about your characters and your presence on YouTube. Now, let's move on into your business model, yeah? And DD and Friends has gone from gadgets onto the screens, merchandises, as well as at the theatre. Now, you've signed an IP agreement with Astro, as you mentioned earlier, now to produce 2 seasons of DD and Friends, as well as, you know, interactive theatre. Now, why did you decide to take on this intellectual property route?
Right. The reality is IPs can do great things. IPs can do a lot of things. And we're talking about not just in terms of reaching out to people, but also, of course, in terms of revenue, right? So it's something which we believe is sustainable. Because I think maybe 10 years ago, the thinking of cartoons in Malaysia was, I'll do a cartoon, I'll give all the rights to the TV stations, and I'm done. And we don't think that way. And because IP is a way to go, you can monetize, you can create different products and avenues of business, right? Using IP. So, for us, we started DD and Friends as an IP, and we kind of like asked around, and how do we manage this IP? How do we make sure that we don't abuse it? We don't. Okay. We take care of it nicely, so we can distribute it nicely in different channels.
Okay, but the current arrangement that we understand is that you have a 90-10 ratio IP agreement. Yeah, so 90% is on the production, 10% goes to Digital Durian. Now, is that something that is applied across the board for all your animation agreement?
No, it's not 90-10. Right. So in terms of IP ownership, and it's basically again, I can't give the exact figures, right? But it's basically, if you want to keep it simple, it's like 50-50, right? So we basically co-produce together, we invest the monies together, and we get the returns together, and that's how we manage it with our co-production partner Astro. And
so with Astro is 50-50.
Plus, minus. Again, I can't give the exact figure, but it's somewhere around there.
I mean, roughly, is this the same ratio that you apply when you sign an agreement with all your business partners?
No, it could be. And it doesn't have to be. Again, business is all about negotiations and right. What power or what each partner can put onto the table, right? So there are deals which there are 30-70, there are 50-50s. We've heard tri-parties where it's 30-30-40. So the reality is it could be either or. And moving forward, we're growing as a studio. We have more revenues, more cash flow to move forward. And it's not just the cash flow again, it's the know-how.
Yeah.
Right.
So we've seen your financials and it looks very healthy at the moment. But at the same time, we can't help wondering about the possible missed opportunities that could come from, you know, potential revenues if you were to, for example, take on the production yourself.
Okay. Actually, production-wise, we are... It's basically 90% done by, or 95% by Digital Durian. Right. I think it's basically... The loss would be in terms of monetization, right? Because I think there's so much more that an IP can do. There's so much more which we can explore doing. For example, DD and Friends and Omar and Hana could be preschool curriculum, and it could be theme parks one day. It could be digital. So I think, to be honest, we started as a digital IP.
Mm-hmm.
But only now 30% of our revenues are coming from digital.
Right.
We have 2 million subscribers, but we're not really monetizing from them besides YouTube. So I think there's a huge opportunity to grow the digital revenues. And that's where I think we're not losing, but we're not putting enough focus there yet.
Okay, so besides YouTube, besides theater and also television series, you also have merchandise, which is sold over 1,000 outlets. You also have a merchandise store at The Curve, located in Metro Jaya itself. It is located in a prime location. Is this DD and Friends' biggest merchandise outlet to date?
All right. No, actually. I think Metro Jaya was 3 years ago when we first signed, almost 3 years. We have another one in Kuantan. So the Metro Jaya one is around 500 square feet. The one in Kuantan is 1,000 square feet.
Okay.
And there's another one now, which is just in ICT, Aeon.
Okay.
Right, so that's pretty big too. So,
okay, so why these places, Sinan, for an example, out of the three known malls would be The Curve? And they don't particularly have the highest foot traffic, especially when you compare them with other big shopping malls like Mega Mall and, you know, One Utama's, Sunway Pyramid and so forth. So why did you pick these three malls?
Right, I think the first one, The Curve, was, like you mentioned, it's in a prime location. Right. For branding purposes, it's good to be there.
But it doesn't have the highest foot traffic, though, in comparison to places like Mid Valley and One Utama.
Yeah, so exactly. If you 3 years ago was DDM Friends was 2 years old, right? It was totally different from now. We had less numbers. We had less partners then. So I think we couldn't yet pitch for this. More prime places, right? But The Curve being it's not the biggest footfall, but it's beside IKEA. And I think the fact that the position, the location they gave us was actually in front. And we were bidding against some international IPs, right? So they chose us to be there. And it's in front of the playground. So I think it was actually quite a good location for us. And the other two, one is in on the east coast of Malaysia. We have a lot of fans there. And the next one, which just opened, was in Shah Alam. So Shah Alam is a great market for Malays.
That was 3 years ago. How about now? Are you planning to open in any of these big malls?
Right. The reality is, the focus is to get the merchandise out to as many places as possible. Because the DDM Friends is a very mass, and Omar Hana, right? They're very mass IPs. So from Johor to Kanga, right? You're talking about and Sabah and Sarawak. So the idea is to be in more outlets than having an experience store now. But we learned that having an experience store is also not, you need to put a lot of effort in it, right? So I think we are not focusing there yet. We're working with partners. So we're working with Metro Jaya and Parkson and Aeon to help them do that for us. But having our own experience store, I think it's going to take a few more years.
Okay. Let's get to know Didi and Friends. Yep. What is the philosophy behind your character? Now, you have two animation features. Didi and Friends originally focused on Malay folklore nursery rhyme. Omar and Hana, on the other hand, your new animation, which has a more Islamic-oriented storyline and as well as character. Do you think that your animations are culturally translatable, you know, beyond the Malay and or the Islamic community?
Yep. Okay, so let's talk about DDM Friends first. So DDM Friends is now in 9 languages, and English, Spanish, Portuguese, Hindi, Bahasa Indonesia, and they're doing pretty well. I think it's still 1 year old in all those territories, so it's starting to pick up. And DDM Friends it's because they're chickens, and it's acceptable around the world, right? When you talk about Omar and Hana, when we started it, we really wanted it to be a global IP. And it's a market where not many people want to invest to do quality Islamic cartoons because they're afraid that they won't get the returns. And we took that risk because we saw a gap. We believe that we have the quality and the know-how on how to do good content for this target age and for this target market. So for Omar Hana, we have it in three languages now. So it's in Malay. And it also has 2 million subscribers, separate from DDM Friends. 60% of that comes from Indonesia. We are in Arabic, so we're actually broadcasted in 22 countries on Spacetoon. And it's also on YouTube, Spacetoon YouTube channel. We also have English. And English now, I think, if I'm not mistaken, the latest stats show that 16% comes from the UK. Another 13% comes from the US. And Malaysia is around 10%. So it shows that it's actually going global. And the feedback is not just the views. We're talking about the parents are engaged and they send, mashallah, I'm so happy for you guys doing this and please do more. And we're also doing collaboration with international artists. So yes, it can go global. And the target for both these IPs is to become world-class animations by 2023. So what do we mean by that? Is we went, if you ask 7 children out of 10 children around the world, and they would actually know these IPs and enjoy it.
Right. I wish to use one example. His cartoon represents sort of like all races and the facets of all these different cultures. For example, Chinese coffee shop and Indian wedding in this cartoon. So at the moment, is it because of competition? Because you do have Upin and Ipin as well. So is that one of the reasons that you have chosen the Islamic audience rather than a more sort of nationalist audience when it comes to animation?
Right. So for Omar Hana, it was never a thought. Upin Ipin is doing this, we should do this. No. And it came from, we always wanted to do an Islamic content. And again, my parents, they were lecturers and both on the Islamic side. And I think the push factor was actually a lot of parents gave feedback online. So, hey, make Didi recite doa, make Didi do some Islamic alif bata. And the reality is Didi are chickens. And there's so much which they can do. So I think 3 years after doing Didi, we decided that, hey, let's venture to this, something which you always wanted to do. And that was the reason why.
Okay, brilliant. So Sinan, you know, before we end our conversation today, now, what's the next big thing that we can expect from Digital Durian the next coming years, especially in your international expansion plan?
Right. On the international end, we are creating new seasons, new songs, right? And the target is to make it viral, right? To produce something which not just kids enjoy, but something which parents talk about too. And of course, if you want to relate to one, would be probably be Baby Shark or Johnny Yes Papa. Mm-hmm. So that's the target, right?
Yeah.
We are doing great efforts to make that happen. Even our new season for DDM Friends is more global, I would say, and it's English first. So it has always been Malay first.
Right.
We're doing English first this time. We have foreigners working with us now, and we're trying to make it global. So once that happens, and then it's, of course, taking over the world.
Sure.
So through merchandise and our show. So in August, we're doing concert Horror Hore Live.
Mm.
So that's a live concert for kids. This is really, it's basically 80% live, 20% okay. video, right? So it's something which we hope parents will enjoy and kids will enjoy, definitely. And we hope to take this format and bring it global too one day.
Brilliant. Sinan, you know, all the best to you. And thank you so much for speaking to us on The Breakfast Grill this morning. Now, I've been speaking to Sinan Ismail, the CEO of Digital Durian. Now, you've been listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Sharis Abdullah for BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile for unlimited experiences. Baru la best.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.